Hello and welcome to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here tonight with Yerdana Azband. Shavua Tov, everybody. We're on Daf Lamed Vav 36, Masachah Brachot. Masachah Brachot, as you know, we've just now entered the era of the topic of Birkat Hananin, many different blessings for many different things, which we've discussed. And this Daf goes into great detail and machloket, and one might even say pilpul, I'm not sure, but close to that, right? Of breaking down all the different parts of the plant, what gets what bracha? Does everybody agree on what bracha each part gets? And if the answer is, of course, no. I want to actually begin here with a little bit of the text from Daf Lamed Hey, Ahmed Bet at the very end, where basically, even without going inside, it talks about the idea that when you come to make your blessing on your food item, there's a basically an inclination to minimize the number of brachot that you want to make. You don't want to go into excess of brachot. So the idea is that if you have an ikar and you have a tafel, if you have the main thing that is the reason that you're eating, let's say, and the tafel, which is just an accompaniment, let's say, then you don't make two brachot. You just make the bracha on the ikar. And of course, in the context of this discussion, there's a lot of, ins and outs of how important does the ikar have to be? How tafel, how secondary does the tafel have to be? Do not get a bracha. But what happens with this is that it ends up discussing there's a drink or a beverage or maybe something medicinal, which is called anigron, which is the water which had a bee boiled in it. Anigron is the water which had the beet boiled in it, and sigron is the water in which all boiled vegetables are boiled, right? So now we're talking about, you might call it soup, but it's not. It's just the liquid water before it ever becomes soup. And the question is, what do you do with this? Well, there seems to be a medicine, at least from that era, where a certain amount of oil would be added to this. And then this apparently was to gargle, right? So that you have, I don't know, vegetable water, let's call it that for lack of a better term. We have a better term. We have the term of the Gemara, but let's use this for our for a conceptual understanding of it. And it's added, vegetable oil is added to that. And when you put that together, you have an item that will bring some curative properties, presumably, to your body. And the Gemara here says, but when you're taking medicine or when you're using something that otherwise might actually be borei pri ha'adamah, it might actually come from the ground, or shehakol nieh bidvaro, it might be something that you would make the blessing of, that everything is according to God's statement in the world. You would make those blessings if you were eating these items or if you were drinking them for the purpose of food and drink. But the moment you come to them as medicinal items, well, then this is not a blessing for Birkat Hanani. This is not an item for Birkat Hanani, and we would not make those blessings on them before using these ostensibly food items that are no longer have that identity of food for a curative property. There is a blessing that Chazal suggests should be used right before you come to take medicine, but we're not there yet. It's on Daf Samach, page 60. Please, God will remember to discuss it then. I do know people who make this blessing, the Daf Samach blessing, before they come to take medicine. I have always intended to do so, and I very often forget, and I'm, abashed about that. I would like to change that practice. I think that there is value to recognizing that when we take medicine, we are, doing something curative for our bodies that is with the grace of God. The blessings for Birkat Hananin are a little bit different. Birkat Hananin is we're getting food benefit from the items that we're ingesting, and we are thanking God for them. And the nature of what benefit that we're getting with regard to our bodies is something that I don't want to call it optional. We need food to live, but there's something of enjoyment, hana'ah. There's something of benefit that it's not as I don't say it's not essential. Food is necessary to live, but each item of food is not per se essential to live. So the whole orientation towards these blessings is one much more of simple appreciation, for the not for the fun of it, with the fun of it, with the appreciation for what's going on here, as opposed to something that is medicinal and may in fact be necessary for your life, for curative properties, whatever. I would like to point out, and Yerdina, I'll thank you for this point, that in that day and age, medicinal properties were something that were coming out of the same items, let's say, herbs or roots or any kind of food, all anything that's becoming medicine was coming from the ground as well as food was, right? Meaning they're all coming from the ground. Nowadays, when we have medicine, very often this medicine is synthetic. It's coming out of, a chemical plant. And thank God that they are able to make these medicines. And we do, in fact, the blessing for medicine will just as well apply. But the blessings for Birkat Hanani, for food, are no longer even a question on some of those tablets, pills, whatever, capsules, because they're not borei pri adamah, borei pri eitz. I guess shahakol, but again, it's not food.
Yeah, I think it's, again, a great example of how the world of the Talmud was experienced very differently than our world. And there probably was a real question about medicine versus food, because probably most of their medicine came from the natural world. Yes, we do have medicines today that come from plants and herbs, but they definitely get sort of, when we're talking about Western medicine at least, sort of manufactured in a plant and in a way that, like, it's not recognizable as that herb or plant anymore. For them, this was probably a real question. This gets to what I wanted to talk about on this daf, which was there's a lot of discussion about a mitzvah called orla. And I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes going through that mitzvah and what makes it special. And I think something that we could take out of, a lot of the discussion that they have around orla. So orla literally means, right, like people translate it as uncircumcised or the foreskin. And it's a particular agricultural mitzvah commandment that we find in Vayikra, Perek Yud Tet, chapter 19, in the Psukim Chaf Gimel through Chaf Hey, verses 23 through 25. And essentially what the commandment is that when you plant a new tree, the first 3 years, one cannot actually use the fruit of the tree. And then on the fourth year, when you would think, like, fine, those first 3 years are over, you actually had to bring that fruit to Yerushalayim and it would be enjoyed by the Kohanim. And then finally, on the fifth year, you could actually use the fruit. Very, very interesting mitzvah. So, first of all, its name, okay, which is Orla. If you go on Safaria and you click on that verse, you can see every single commentator and many of them, go through. What exactly does that mean? The Ibn Ezra has an explanation that basically says just like the orla is something that we don't use, the same thing that the fruit for the first 3 years is something that we don't use. And that's why it has that same name. But it's an interesting terminology. I'm not going to spend time now going through why that in itself could be its own shear. A couple of things, though, I want to point out about it. So the mitzvah of orla is what we call. It's an agricultural law, and the agricultural laws tend to be in a category of what we call mitzvot hatzluyot ba'aretz or shetzluya ba'aretz, which literally means it's a mitzvah, it's a commandment that can only be done in Eretz Yisrael, right? Like Shemitah would be a great example, the sabbatical year where we don't farm anything on the seventh year. Orla, unlike other agricultural law, is actually one, and the Gemara on this page discusses it, and that's why I wanted to point it out, is the only, but it doesn't say it's the only one. This is what I wanted to share. Is actually one of the only ones, it's the only one that you did inside or outside of Eretz Yisrael. There is a question, and this page also alludes to it, which is if it's a Suffolk Orla, if you're not sure if the item is Orla, outside of Eretz Yisrael, you could use it. Inside of Eretz, right, we were Mekel, we were more lenient. Inside Eretz Yisrael, you are not more lenient. So very, very interesting mitzvah. The other thing about it is the laws about it are found in Masechet Orla, which is part of Zra'im, right? The whole of, we have six sections of the Mishnah, of Seder Zra'im, which basically deals with all agricultural law. Brachot is the only one that there is a Babylonian Talmud on. The Yerushalmi Talmud does have sections on agricultural law. If you think about it, that makes sense because since most of those laws were only kept in Israel, the Yerushalmi Talmud, which is written in Israel, they had commentary on that. The Babylonian Talmud, this was probably much less relevant. So you can see a further discussion in the Jerusalem Talmud, in the Talmud Yerushalmi on Orla. It has its own Masechet, but we don't see that with the Babylonian Talmud. So I just want to conclude with one other thought. I think when we see these types of pages of Gemara, where there seems to be a lot of focus and detail paid to, you know, the different parts of the fruit and what was the intention of the fruit and the, you know, is the flower, the bud part of Orla, not part of Orla, you know, and, you know, it's what I'm always amazed by these agriculture laws is what took up a Jewish halachic life at different periods of time. And I think at this particular period of time, particularly for those Jews who were living in Israel, and it was an agricultural society, this was a lot of what you spent your time worrying about in terms of halacha. And today, like, I think that's some of what's so amazing of the modern state of Israel is the reintroduction of a lot of these laws. And again, I know that I said that Orla was the one that you kept both in and out. But my point more is that you had a whole Seder of Mishnah, a whole section of Mishnah with tons of agricultural law. And today, if you were to ask people, like, sort of what defines observance in Jews, agricultural law would not sort of be up there as the set of mitzvot of, I think, by which most Jews would define themselves. So what would I take out of a daf like this? I think this is a beautiful opportunity to think about, you know, when we care so much about the world around us, the trees around us, the plants around us, the fruits around us, it gives us a much deeper appreciation of the beautiful world that Hashem has created for us. It's really like a ma'rabu ma'asecha Hashem. You see that they're really trying to get to an understanding of all the different parts of trees, of fruit, and is it ha'adama, is it ha'etz? And one could walk away from a page like this and be like, oh my God, my head is spinning, you know? It's like so much, you know, like back and forth. But, you know, I also think one could walk away from it and be like, how lovely that they had such a beautiful appreciation of the natural world around them. And for me being a city person, I don't always have that appreciation. And I think all of Masechet Brachot, particularly this parak, which is really focusing on Berachat Hanenin, you know, like this, and it's tied into what you said before, you know, to really think about like what appreciation do we have for the natural world around us and the care with which the Tanaim and Amoraim try to understand that world around it and categorize it. And therefore, what were the implications of it within Jewish law?
I think that's actually, let's even take it further and say, really, this is what all of Masechet Brachot has been about. I know you just said this, but beyond the natural law, the natural world, rather, I'm sorry, it is late where I am. It also, we're talking about time, right? Paying an increased awareness of time and how that bringing a focus of anybody who's coming to Daven to pay attention to when is it time for Shema? When is it time for Tefillah? And when we then come to a heightened awareness of the kind of focus that we need to have when we come to Daven and what circumstances are we in and who's our congregation and so on, right? And everything that not every little topic that we've dealt with, but every major topic I think that we've seen in Masechet Brachot does bring this, like, you know, Marabu Masecha Hashem in all of the capacities that we affect our daily life, that there's a heightened awareness. And I think that, you know, with that heightened awareness as you go through everything you do, it's not just a matter of agriculture and isn't that lovely to appreciate, but I think we're supposed to imbue everything we do with that extra level of meaning and extra level of, again, awareness, I'll say. I'm wary of misquoting or misparaphrasing Rabbi Tursky, Rav Yitzchak Tursky, Professor Isidore Tursky, the Talna Rebbe Zatzal, but I do recall him talking about Kedusha, that sanctity, holiness is brought about when we live with a heightened level of awareness. I think that perhaps Masechet Brachot is giving us that, encouraging that kind of the opposite of mindless wandering through your day, but that every single thing that you touch is now within the realm of Torah and rabbinic tradition.
I love how you articulated that. And I guess I'll leave with, you know, a simple that I think this is the purpose of Daf Yomi in a way. It's really exposing ourselves to ideas and concepts that maybe we didn't know about before. And, you know, what can we take out of them as life lessons? And I think that's part of what you and I were trying to accomplish with this podcast is that Talmud is accessible to everybody and there are lessons to be learned on every Daf. So with that, we'll conclude. Wishing everybody a great week. Until tomorrow's daf, remember, you can find us on all major podcasts. We're now being hosted on Michelle Farber's Hadron website, and we're so excited about that partnership. And we look forward to continuing our learning throughout the week.